Curtain up, theater people, and welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket, coming to you from the Hell's Kitchen area of Midtown Manhattan, right smack dab in the middle of Broadway. My name is Sean Chandler, and I'll be your host. Your Program Is Your Ticket is a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make those happen. As many of you know, and some newbies may not know, in which case, let me explain it to you. Your Program Is Your Ticket is a helpful system where your program is literally your ticket to get into the theater in smaller, more intimate productions. It's these works that we like to highlight, and it's our goal on this show to feature as many of these great productions as possible while still discussing and touching on the biggies. I love theater and see as much as I can wherever I go. During the travels of the production of my husband and my play, At the Flash, I've met many wonderful people from all over the world in the theater community, and it is my honor to bring them on as guests to the show. Tonight's guest will be a mega-talented actor and the artistic director of the New York City-based The Other Side of Silence, also known as TOSOS. We'll refer to it as that during our conversation, just so you know. They're a sensational theater group dedicated to preserving the theatrical heritage of the LGBTQ community. It's the fabulous Mark Robert Finley. I'm so excited that he's here. He's not only such a major contributor to LGBTQ theater, he's a great guy as well, and a wonderful actor, too. I'll be bringing Mark on in just a few minutes, and since he's the artistic director of an LGBTQ theater organization, I thought it might be nice and to be a good idea to give out some historical highlights of LGBTQ theater history. Now, it's odd because you think that LGBTQ folks would have had a strong historical presence in the theater community, but although there were traces and hints here and there of LGBTQ characters, there weren't a lot of obvious examples, probably because of the lack of acceptance through history, lack of rights. I'm sure a big reason for that could be religion as well. But back in 1966, New York Times theater critic Stanley Kaufman wrote a very interesting article where he stated that, and this quote, "Social and theatrical convention needed to be widened so that homosexual life may be as freely dramatized as heterosexual life, may be as frankly treated in our drama as in contemporary fiction." Now, that was sort of a game changer because not 2 years later, Mark Crowley sort of blew the doors off the hinges of LGBTQ theater with his groundbreaking play, The Boys in the Band, which is a frank depiction of a group of gay men in New York City. It ran for 1,000 performances off-Broadway and was made into a movie, which you can find and rent and see. And I really like this piece. It's a snapshot of what sort of a gay male life was like in New York City back then. Then in 1979, Bent opened in London with Sir Ian McKellen, which led to a New York transfer production with Richard Gere. I think that was his big break. Then came my absolute favorite play ever, Torch Song Trilogy by Harvey Fierstein. I love this play. I remember I saw it in 1982 on my first trip to New York City with my theater group. I was 17 years old. I was in high school, not out, but I went to see this play and I was just so blown away. I actually physically tripped on the stairs and fell. I was just so dazed. I was okay. I was able to go see the next act, but such a wonderful show. It ran as three separate plays originally. It's a trilogy, which is in the name, at La Mama, which is an off-Broadway theater, was an off-Broadway theater. And it moved to Broadway, as I had said, in 1982. Such a great show. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that Michael Urie is coming back with a production of it very, very soon out here in New York City. And I think he'll be terrific in it. He will be playing the lead, which is Arnold Beckoff. Great show. Then came As Is by William Hoffman and The Normal Heart by Larry Kramer. These are plays that have to do with the AIDS crisis of the 80s. And The Normal Heart, you may remember, was recently done and as a revival here in New York City. And was also turned into an HBO movie. So just those are great shows as well. And then came Love, Valor, Compassion by Terrence McNally. Now, I'm sorry, everyone, but I'm going to kind of name drop a lot in this show because, I don't know, I'm a gay guy and I wrote a gay play, so I've met gay people who write gay plays and stuff. But it's by Terrence McNally, won the Pulitzer Prize, that particular show. My husband and I went to a LGBTQ writers forum in L.A. when we lived in L.A., and he was there, and I go up and introduce myself, and of course I'm a total spaz and a total geek and, you know, can't maintain, and he was so nice and so cool and so down to earth and asked about our play. He was just a cool guy. If you don't believe me, there's a picture of me barely keeping it together and my husband and Terrence McNally on my Facebook page. And then there came The Biggie, which is Angels in America by Tony Kushner. And this play it's actually two plays. It's called, the first play is Millennium Approaches, and the second play is Perestroika, which I looked up, and that means to thaw. And just these plays are just so profound and interesting, and a wonderful take on the AIDS crisis and Mormonism, and I mean just so many things. And if you want to see a representation of that, HBO did a movie version of that, directed by my favorite director, the recently passed Mike Nichols, which makes me sad, but oh well. And then a shout out to my writer's group pal, John Marins, and his play, The Temperamentals, that came out, which recently had a critically lauded production in Chicago, just great acclaim, and I'm really proud of him for that. And then came shows like Next Fall and The Pride. And we're so lucky to have had Off-Broadway to open many of these shows and let them build audiences. It's just a smaller house, a little bit cheaper, where you can bring these ideas that a lot of them were probably very experimental and risky to producers and backers. And it was just an easier, cheaper way to get them seen and then developed, and oftentimes they become Broadway shows or they revive as Broadway shows. So we're happy about that. Okay, now for our guest. As I had indicated earlier, today's guest is prolific actor and artistic director Mark Robert Finley. Hi, Mark, and welcome to your program. Is your ticket?
Hey, Sean, how are you?
Doing great. Thank you so much for being a guest on your program. Is your ticket? It's such an honor.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
I met Mark through seeing him in a play that was written by Kathleen Warnock, who I believe is also part of Tosos. It was called The Further Adventures of at NYC Fringe last year, where At the Flash was performed as well. And then afterwards, we talked to him, and he was just such a cool guy. And then we hooked up and. Well, we met. Sometimes I say hooked up, and I hooked up to the kids is like something that hooked up to the adults is not. I am a happily married man. So, Mark, tell us a little bit about yourself and your creative theater passion.
Okay, let me see. I got the theater bug as a kid, very very early. I have always been a writer my whole life. I got into theater by. Embarrassingly by watching TV like Brady Bunch and stuff. And whenever they were in a play, it really turned me on. And I was like, that's what I want to do. So I started writing plays in high school and I produced and directed a play in high school. And then I went on to college. I went to North Carolina School of the Arts and graduated in 87, moved to New York, and have kind of felt like, I went to school as an actor, and when I came to New York, I felt like, all three of the things I'm interested in, writing, directing, and acting have all kind of come together mostly as a director. I feel like, because I'm an actor, I know how to talk to actors. Because I'm a writer, I know how to approach a script, and because I'm a writer and a director, writer and an actor, I'm searching for as much control as I can get. And that's what I like about directing, being able to control the audience's vision.
Oh, Okay, I love that you totally cop to the fact that you got turned on to plays by watching The Brady Bunch. That's great.
Oh, yeah. And Partridge Family, all that mess. I can't say I went to a brilliant production of. I'm like, no, I lived in Dallas. We didn't have brilliant productions of. It was, you know, The Brady's. Marsha Brady's Juliet.
You know, I actually have, I think, The Brady's greatest hits on my iPod.
Mm-hmm. Of course you do.
But yeah, naturally. I mean,
yeah.
True story. Sunshine Day Time to Change with Peter, like, going into the his voice cracking. So.
Yeah, pork chops and applesauce, all that.
So you've been in pursuit of this for probably about a good 30 years, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I moved to New York in 87, right after school, and I've been here ever since. When I got here, I did a few tours, and then I started – I got with a couple of grassroots small theater groups and started writing for them and writing for myself, and that kind of morphed into – forming a smaller theater company, and then, you know, we meet other theater companies, and now I run my own. Well, I call it my own, but I run it with three other people. But that's kind of my education in off-Broadway theater and how to produce theater at a grassroots level.
Cool. Tell us about one of the plays that you've written, your favorite play that you've written.
Oh, wow, that I've written. Mm-hmm. Let me see. I wrote a play several years back called Civilized. We did a reading of it recently as a fundraiser, and it's interesting. It was written in 2003, but it was written about 95. Mm-hmm. And 10 years later, I'm like, wow, the world has changed so fast, because there's little things like not everybody having a cell phone and sending out mass mailings of headshots, you know, by sitting up and attaching the paper to the photo and stuff like that. But it was about how we kind of change our behavior to fit relationships and how to, in a larger sense, how we do that to fit crises going on. The essential relationship is there's a long-term couple. One of them is HIV, gets HIV, the other one does not, and the one with HIV is trying to convince his partner to go out and seek other partners because he is afraid of giving him that part of himself going forward. So that's the central plot of it, and because I am who I am, it's essentially a comedy of manners. So the comedy spools out from there. But, yeah, I mean, again, we live in a different world right now. But I was really happy to just see that come to fruition, to really see what I was thinking come out on stage and in some cases not. And it was really educational for me and inspiring me. And again, this was a while ago, so it really kind of spurred me to go on.
That sounds like a great show and such a great concept. Isn't it interesting that when you're writing the show, you're thinking one thing, and then when it gets up on its feet, when you're doing a reading and actors are reading it, the dynamics change. Things that you thought were going to hit – fall flat, and then things that you never even thought of are amplified.
Yeah. I think it's also because of that. I think it's really important as a writer to find a director that you can work with, that you can trust. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's not impossible, but I think it's very challenging to have a dual focus as the director and let, you know what your central story is, but letting stuff like that come out and the writer going, no, I meant this. Mm-hmm. No, it's about this. Because, you know, oftentimes you don't know. It's just kind of your inside voice coming out, you know, and you kind of have to trust that.
Oh, absolutely. It's a fine line that you walk as a writer when you're dealing with a director producing the show or directing the show and putting it up on its feed, because you do want your vision to be conveyed, but you also want to give them an opportunity to expand the work.
Sure. And you know, again, it's a collaborative art form, so you hopefully have good actors who can bring even more stuff to the text, you know, and fill it out in their own way and kind of put their mark on it.
Oh, definitely, for sure.
Yeah.
While wearing your various theater hats, if you will, what messages and themes do you strive to convey to audiences through the projects you choose?
Well, I think that, again, we're living in a rapidly changing world. And just in the time, I was listening to the plays that you were talking about, just since then, gay people have so much more of a visibility in all forms of media. And, you know, it used to be that you were just like the either degenerate character or the drag queen or you got promoted to kooky best friend. But, you know, now we're central characters and such. And I think that's fantastic. What Tassos is striving to do is kind of tell those stories that you aren't going to see necessarily on TV or on Broadway necessarily, but it's important to me to also tell those stories in a life-affirming way. I mean, I hate to use that term because it's so overused. It sounds a little disingenuous, but I don't want to show that story about the older guy who's in love with the young boy and tragically gets his heart broken again, mm-hmm. or you know the hooker story again. You know, it's out there. But that doesn't necessarily mean I want to tell all the stories where the gay guy is the honorable guy, you know?
Right.
I don't want to cookie cutter who we are and always be the perfect role model, but I want to explore more of our stories. When Doric and I first put the company together, there were two plays that we weren't interested in doing. One was AIDS plays, simply because that was all that was out there. This is, you know, turn of the century. And the other one is we didn't want to do the Will I Ever Find a Boyfriend play. Mm-hmm. Because, again, we felt like that was really represented. So we're constantly looking for stories that people can relate to that are universal because of their specificity, if that makes sense.
Definitely.
And also just, you know, because of who Tassos is, how Tassos was founded, and kind of who I am as a person, I'm always really interested in stuff with a historical context, because I think it's really important, especially today, for us as people in the LGBT community to really remember to see our place in history and, if possible, to look backward and forward at the same time. I think it's really dangerous to feel like things just happened, you know, because they didn't. People fought long and hard for the rights we have now, and you know, especially in the times we live in, we got to remember that, you know, and always keep the fight going. And I think that's kind of reflected in the stuff that we tend to choose for Tassos as well.
But that's an excellent direction. It really is.
Good. We were originally started with, you know, when I met Derek Wilson back in 2001, unfortunately, I didn't know who he was, and that's a shame. He was one of the founders of the Off-Broadway movement. And I didn't know who he was. He was one of the first gay playwrights. And we started the company because we were, of course, talking about his work, but we were also talking about Lanford Wilson and Robert Patrick and stuff that just these prolific, brilliant writers that don't get produced anymore. So it was our vision to bring those writers back as well as providing a home for new queer writers and performers. So we kind of have a little dual purpose and try to meet in the middle as much as we can.
So, so important to provide a creative element for the historical works, as well as, like you said, looking backwards and looking forwards, as well as the up and coming newer writers. It's terrific what you do. And I believe I was pronouncing the acronym wrong. It's TOSOS, not TOSOS, right?
Well, you know, it depends on who you talk to. It makes sense to call it TOSOS.
Yeah.
Doric always called it TOSOS, so that's what I call it.
Oh.
Either way is correct.
Doric was an incredible pioneer for LGBTQ theater.
Indeed. And yeah. It was his birthday on yesterday, on the 24th.
Oh.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Doric.
Yeah, we're continuing on for you, Doric.
and quite well, I must say. What do you think is an important direction just theater overall is taking right now?
Well, it's interesting. I was at a director's symposium last year with the SDCC. I can't even talk today. It was a big director's symposium. And it had all different kinds of directors coming to speak for a little while about what they do, about what they've done, and to offer advice to hungry directors like me and my kind. And they were all different people there. Jack O'Brien was there, and people that work on a regional level, people that work on tours, etc. The first guy that spoke was Jack Hoffness, and he was the guy that directed the original production of The Elephant Man in New York. And he was really, really – he also passed away just recently, I think just last year.
Mm.
So I was happy to have gotten to hear him. But he made a really interesting comment. He said he felt like not just theater, but popular arts. He said he feels like we're on a march back to the 60s, that right now things are, the public is looking for reassurance, is looking to be told that, yes, we made the right choice. Yes, we're doing the right thing, as opposed to really questioning anything, really, where they are. And since he kind of came up in the Off-Broadway movement of the 60s and 70s, that's, you know, not his background, but he sees a big return to that. And I'm seeing that as well, and it's really exciting. It's if you look at stuff like Fun Home, you know, that's a story that wouldn't have been told 10 years ago, approached in a very non-Broadway traditional way. If you look at something like The Humans, something presented as a slice of life, but if you peel that top layer back, it's not giving you a moral code. It's not giving you a theme. It's presenting things for you to grab onto, but is one answer better than the other? That's your choice, you know?
Mm.
And it's theater like that that was, you know, kind of rampant in the 60s and 70s that I'm excited to see us go back to. Because, I mean, I'm not saying that there's good theater, bad theater, or good movies, bad movies. I mean, anybody who sees what's on my Netflix instant queue can see that. But I think that in order to really keep contributing to, you know, an American and world literature, you have to keep asking yourself questions. You can't keep settling. And I think we're turning back to that, and I like that. I like that a lot.
That's a terrific answer, because it to me it deals with the content of what you're seeing in the writing and the acting. I've asked that question to a couple of my guests, and a lot of them have given me the answer that it's about the writing and it's about the acting, but audiences are looking for a bigger technical experience. So it's nice to hear you say that. Not that those answers are wrong. I mean, everybody has their own opinion, and there's probably a good deal of truth in that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice to hear you talk about the writing and themes and pathos and all of that. Wonderful. Okay, we only have time for a couple more questions. So I'm going to ask you, what should every theatrical artist, director, writer, composer, actor be doing right now to be relevant and successful in the industry?
I only have a couple minutes, right?
We've got enough time.
Okay. I think that the most important thing is it's tricky because you really let me think before I just had a lot of coffee, so my mouth is kind of going a mile a minute.
You're doing great.
Oh, thanks. I think in order to be relevant, you have to be true to yourself, be true to the story that you're telling, and how you present that. And often that's going to run counter than being successful. Mm-hmm. It depends on what kind of define the term success. Are you looking for monetary success? Are you looking for, I want to be the next Tom Cruise? Don't write that down. Success. Or do you want to be successful in telling your truth? I think if you are successful in telling your truth and surrounding yourself with like-minded people that are also along the same lines and support you in doing that, then you will be relevant and unique and successful in your own way, no matter where you wind up in the industry. I mean, the industry is huge, so there's lots of room. And I also think, I think it's important to remain relevant, to really kind of not forget where you came from ever. And let that inform where you're going. Does that make sense?
Totally. That's a wonderful answer.
Okay, good.
That's great. And we understand that the Tom Cruise analogy was completely hypothetical.
I don't know why it came out of me.
I think that was probably alluding to fame.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you.
That's a great answer, and what it really to me is saying is follow your heart and be true to that, and remember where you came from, and just accept the consequences for what they are. Accept the rewards and the consequences for what they are, and I think that's good, because that to me feels long lasting.
Yeah.
So that's
what you want, you know, or if that's not what you want, if you want to get as much money as you can and then retire, which I think is a legitimate goal,
right?
Too, you know.
Yeah, no judgments.
Right.
No judgments. So. That's your. This is your personal feeling about it, and I'm getting different answers from everyone, and I love all of them. I think they're all terrific answers. Can you tell us what you've been working on lately? What you've been up to?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a play opening next Thursday at Tada at 18 West 23rd Street. It's a play called Damaged Goods. It is a film noir for the stage. The interesting thing about it is it's five women, and they each play men, which is, I guess, a hot thing right now all of a sudden. And It's kind of a gender bending Valentine to film noir, and it kind of goes along the film noir lines, but it's definitely informed by a queer sensibility. And it's a lot of fun. It's incredibly well written. These ladies are fantastic actors, and I'm really excited about getting going with it. We did a workshop of it one night at Dixon Place, mm-hmm. just to see if it would work, and boy, did it work. So we're lucky to fall into a co-production with Emerging Artist Theater, and they approached us to maybe do this in rep with one of their shows, and that's what we're doing. So yeah, right now we're we're in that fun time called Tech Week. So I gotta hang up from here and go over there, which I'm you can tell how much I'm looking forward to. yeah, it's been really exciting and really great for us. It's an odd thing when you run an LGBT theater. It's relatively easy to find male stuff, and it's a little bit more challenging to find female stuff. So it's been great to find something that's this solid and fun and rewarding that's all girls, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's cool. I'm excited about it.
That's great. Did you hear that, all writers out there? I smell an opportunity big time. Straight from an artistic director. Come on now. Go ahead and let's, before we wrap up, give our audiences all your social media information, please.
Great. Well, you can find out about all things Tassos at our website, which is www.tassosnyc. That's TOSOSNYC.org. And it's got everything else there.
Excellent. And that's where folks can go to buy tickets for Damaged Goods as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you can get tickets to Damaged Goods there. You can also check out, we have a site called DamagedGoodsThePlay.com.
Great.
Which is essentially the same thing.
Oh, cool. Well, that's excellent.
All right.
Well, thank you so much, Mark, for being my guest today.
Well, thank you for asking. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. It's you've been an absolute pleasure to speak with, and I think you've imparted a lot of great information to people and some good advice there too. So excellent job.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Before I go, I'd like to give shout outs to some shows I've seen and really enjoyed. And this is a little unusual because usually I'm talking about a show here in New York City or if I take a field trip somewhere. But in this case, I'm going to talk about a benefit performance that's happening here in New York City of, it's actually a benefit concert of Tales of the City, the musical. This is a musical that's based upon the earlier novels of Armistead Maupin's Tales of the City, which is a series of novels. It follows a quote-unquote logical or hand-selected family in San Francisco from the heydays of the 70s on up through 2014, which is when the last book came out. And I hope, as long as he's willing to write them, I've been a huge fan of these books. If you haven't read them, you must. Brilliant work. They're even in anthologies now. It's just they're excellent reads. And what's great is that they have these rich characters, but in every book there's always like some sort of a mystery going on that needs to be solved. So he's terrific. And it's been written into a musical. And my estimation is that the musical is based on the first two books. And that's just kind of being a huge fan. I'm watching it trying to clock what it's based on. And the reason why I say that I've watched it is because they had a very, very well-received run back in 2011. And my husband David and I went to San Francisco where they had the run and saw it. It was incredible. Music and lyrics are written by Scissor Sisters, Jake Shears, and John Garden. Okay, here comes my next name drop. Met Jake Shears at a restaurant in West Hollywood having breakfast with a friend of mine, a young playwright named Dylan Wallace. All of a sudden, his eyes get big, and he's like, I'm like, what's going on? He goes, okay, Jake Shears from Scissor Sisters is right behind you. And I was like, holy crap. Okay, so I got up, and I'm just was like, oh my God, you're the best. You're wonderful. I love your music. And I actually talked to him about the musical, and he said, well, kind of stalled. And that's too bad because it is so good. And then the book is also is written by Jeff Witte, who is an incredible, incredible book writer. He is just so clever and funny, and he's one of my favorites. So, again, it had a great production back in 2011 in San Francisco. It was inventive and super comprehensive for the ground that it covered because it was a lot. Cast members from the production that are returning are Wesley Taylor, who is a young actor who is terrific. He's in a lot of stuff out here and also does a lot of, I believe, web series. Yeah, I think he has his own web series. He plays the male lead character of Michael Mouse Tolliver, and Betsy Wolf, who plays the character of the lead character of Marianne Singleton. And I want to say that, no, I know, she played one half of the lesbian couple in the current or recent revival of Falsettos, which was wonderful. I love that show. And Mary Birdsong, who is uber super talented. She was in Reno 911, and she's been in a lot of shows up here in New York, and she plays the quasi-sexual character of Mona. This production also features transgendered actress Justin Vivian Bond playing the key role of lovable landlady and self-appointed den mother, Mrs. Madrigal. I saw Judy Kaye play this in San Francisco, and I love Judy Kaye, and she was terrific in the part. But the character is transgendered. Sorry, that's a bit of a spoiler. And it's nice that a transgendered actress is playing her. All actors that we saw were excellent, and the piece is wonderful. Now, since this is a benefit, I believe it's to raise money to launch a production. The tickets can be pretty pricey, but if you have the money, please go and see the show. I remember after the show, my husband and I looked at each other and said, why isn't this on Broadway? And we were flabbergasted. The show is on March 27th at 7:30 p.m. at the Music Box Theater. Well, folks, the proverbial 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. I'd like to thank our guest, the awesome and amazing Mark Robert Finley. If you'd like for me to give a shout-out to a show in your area or a mention of your organization, go to my Facebook page at facebook.com/yourprogramisyourticket. Give me a like and shoot me a message, and I'll be happy to give you a shout-out. Take a little time to see a show this week, folks, and don't forget to give a smaller show some love. That's why we're here. And there are a lot of those little theater gems out there that could use your support. Until our next show, good night, theater people, and curtain.